Well, hello, hello, guys. You're listening to Beauty Bites with Dr. K, Secrets of a Plastic Surgeon. And today on the podcast, I'm coming to you live from Las Vegas, the Wynn Hotel. It's the American Med Spa Association meeting. But more important than that, it's me and Dr. Anil Rajani chewing the fat, talking all things beauty. Say hey to Dr. Rajani.
I've been looking forward to this one for a long time. What are we going to cover today?
Well, you are like one of my heroes when it comes to PRF, PRFM, you know, everything related to PRP. I think we should really talk about that because patients and injectors want to know what's the right thing to do, how to do it, and also Sculptra, of course.
Of course, Sculptra. Yeah, I think a lot of people like the more natural look, more natural products, and people like using their own blood products to get a result. And sometimes we combine those with Sculptra, with threads, with fillers and neuromodulators for all the best results. So sounds like a great topic and conversation.
Well, so tell me a little bit more about yourself and tell the audience too. When did you start injecting? Where did you train? How did you ever get into aesthetics, or were you always in it?
Oh boy, that's a story. Well, you know, back in the early 2000s, it was collagen injections and it was the med spa world, and really laser hair removal was the main treatment that were being provided by medical spa type services. And then people would say, oh, I'll have a little injection. And we had collagen, it would last 6 to 8 weeks. And then in 2003 or four, we got Restylane and the hyaluronic acid fillers. And so I started to see my practice go from a lot of the lasers to the injectable products. And from there, it's really taken off. So that's been my journey with it. And I really started it very part-time back then. And I think that was very common. And now it's become so complex and there's so many options, which is part of the reason we're having these type of podcasts, because I find a lot of people are confused on what to do and what is the best looking treatment. Some want natural, maybe some don't.
It's challenging. So patients have such high demands. Like, they need to look picture perfect. Every single aspect of their face is measured and criticized. And it's a challenging environment as an injector. And it's just being a woman, it's hard to deal with that. How do you deal with that? Expectations that are over the top and unrealistic.
Yeah. And I think, you know, that is a big difference from 20 years ago. I think those expectations weren't there. It was more a question of safety. And same with things like Botox back then. People were worried about the toxin effect of it. And now we have all the safety data. In terms of expectations, I think that's grown. And I think there's a demand on people to look perfect. But as providers, I think it's also important that we're realistic and that we let people know that we're just going to be the best version for what we want in ourselves. And everyone has a different goal. And I think taking a history from our patients, finding out what's important to them and what they want, and then putting the brakes on some patients. But it's certainly a moving target. And I think as an industry, that's why we go to these conferences and talk and have frank conversations about it. But then you also have social media, the Instagram, the TikTok phenomena, and the drive for financial success. And now aesthetics is part of that.
It is. And it's very important if you're an injector and you're not attending these meetings that you need to get in here. This is your boot camp. This is your time to learn and refine your techniques. If you just approach everything as just it's a shot and you're going to shoot it up, good luck, because it's not going to last too long. You need to have an artistic approach to how you construct the human face.
Yeah. And we're growing so fast that it's difficult to train enough people to do the right things to get the great results. And that's part of why I think you're very involved in training, in teaching, and in spreading the message on social media and your platforms. And that's what drives you. And I think that's part of getting that message out there. So we're growing fast and there will be some growing pains, but it's just very complex and it's partly societal. And we take some responsibility for it, of course. So I'm excited about that journey. I'm excited about what's coming and keeping up with all these latest technologies that we're getting. And a lot of them allow us to produce better results.
Yeah, I mean, being in the social eye, you do realize that you have responsibility because you make the trends. Like, when you talk about something enough and it becomes word of mouth and it's popular out there, then people want to do it. So you have to make sure, like for me, for example, threads have been in place for 30 years or more. And we use them surgically all the time, but I haven't flooded my Instagram with images of threads because I think they're a good tool, but I think that the more I talk about them, the more people will have the expectation that they do something miraculously fabulous that they don't. And so I'm very cautious about putting that content out there. So we have to vet what we say and understand that people will take it to the next level times 10 when you say it once.
I think you're absolutely right. And for many of us using things like Threads, people come in thinking that they're getting a thread lift or Threads, but we direct them elsewhere because they don't have the foundation for it. Threads to me are kind of the icing on the cake. That's how I use them in practice. But for some, it might be the primary procedure that they do to rejuvenate a face. And that's not my perspective on Threads personally. So I think you're absolutely right on that.
You're so tactful. His perspective personally, he's saying like, I mean, I'm not that tactful. I'm just going to be like, why would you use a thread to pull the skin a little more taut when you actually are missing facial foundation, bone structure, volume loss, fat pads are deflated, and a thread itself can't do everything. Can't do that.
No, I think when you're talking non-surgical, even if you're talking surgical, in my opinion, one thing can't do everything. If you take us back, and you've been there, where CO2 laser became fractionated. So that's an aggressive laser that targets water. And there was a time when you would ablate the whole face. And now with the newer ones, we use fractionated, where we keep some of the skin intact. So the healing time is much more palatable to people. But that at one point was touted as a facelift in a laser. And as we know, it's just part of it. So everything to me is a combination of Sculptra, of PRF, of lasers, of resurfacing. So that's the way I look at it, but it's part of what you teach, it's part of what I teach, and I think it overwhelms those that are trying to do this part-time or one day a week, whereas for you and I, this is a full-time job. We probably have 3 full-time jobs. I mean, you're probably working however many hours a week. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to instill that upon, because when I started, it absolutely was, you could work a day or two a week. You're running laser hair removal, collagen was gone in 6 weeks, a bit of Botox out the door. But to your point, that isn't near what we do now.
It really isn't. We've evolved so much, but I feel a little bit of fear for the public because we've tapped 6% of the aesthetic market, and just the pandemic alone has given this explosion of demand for our services. And frankly, like, we can't clone ourselves, and I'm trying desperately and want to hire and teach new people, but there's a learning curve, and you have to be doing this for a while to understand the art and the aesthetic of it. And I just want patients out there to know that it's not like buying a pack of gum, and you can buy that pack of gum in any convenience store out there. It's not like that. You need to find someone who has artistic skill and training. And like you said, it doesn't come from one day a week, and it takes years. And so I just think we're going to see a generation of injectors who are inexperienced and who need to really build all this foundational learning. So buyer beware.
Well, if you think about it, when I started, if you go back to 2000 and you did Botox injections, collagen, Restyle injections, people would say, what are you doing? That's foo-foo stuff. Yeah. It was looked down upon. No one wanted to do it. The plastics didn't want it. The derms didn't want it. We had interns doing it, guys like me doing it. And then now there's a glamour to it. And I see why, because you can make a difference in someone's life and the tools are there. So now we have that, and so it's glamorous to be in it, but as you know, and you speak very well to that, it's complex. So yes, it's glamorous when you have all the tools. And one point that you mentioned I want to expand on, people often ask, number one question is, how do I find a great provider? I get that on YouTube all the time. So it's complex, and my answer is you have to do hundreds of Sculptra injections before you can say you're comfortable with it. So yes, I hope that the new generation of injectors realize that you can't just work a day a week, half a day a week, and come back a month later, you've forgotten everything. It's a daily ritual of injection.
Yeah, it's a responsibility. And I just hope that we instill that in injectors, like, take time and learn and invest in yourself and be good to your patient by really having a knowledge base and read and come to these meetings. So important. Sculptra is one of my favorite tools, and I hope that we can teach everyone out there that it's a great aspect of anti-aging. Building your own new collagen, biostimulating that process is pretty incredible. What are your thoughts on Sculptra? I know you've been doing it for so long.
Yeah, no, and I've done it for a long time, but it's also always been a mix. I've done the fillers, I've done Sculptra, and I used to do more lasers than I do now. So it's always, to me, it's a tool. Someone's coming to build your house, and they bring a hammer and nails. You'll send them home. You need a guy with a skill saw. You need concrete. So to me, it's always been a tool. I think it's an underutilized tool, and it's become a big part of my practice because not a lot of people use it. They're scared of it, and rightly so. You have to do more sculpt. You can't dissolve it. So I love it. I think there should be more of it being used. I think in the next couple of years, you'll see more and more being used because of the natural collagen stimulating effect that it gives. So I'm excited for the next couple of years. And people like yourself are going to be training a lot of people. So buckle your bootstraps. You're going to be busy.
It's the power of regeneration. So it's and you'd use platelet-derived plasma. The body has these abilities to turn on genes that are laying quiescent, and certain triggers will grow your own new collagen. And so I think it's so important for people to realize you don't want to just keep on buying a one-year product that you rent. You rent these gel fillers for a year, and they don't do much for the skin. They give you a little stimulation of collagen, a lot of nice plumpiness, maybe more plumpiness than the face needs. Now we're finding that fillers last so much longer than we thought. It's going to be nice to wean people's dependency by using more Sculptra. And I love it for hollows of the face. So the temples, preauricular area, pre-gel, you know, around the canine fossa where the teeth recede a little bit. What are your favorite areas?
If I had to pick one favorite, I like all the ones you're talking about. To me, especially for women, around the facial region, because, you know, traditionally we were cautious about it because the nodules, the way it was used. I think with the new methods, with adding biostimulation from one's own body, we use less product, so more dilute type of Sculptra. But what it does, it thickens the dermis, and you're not going to get that from fillers. And the lower face ages often with fine lines, wrinkles. Now, I'm not talking about putting it in the lip or above the lip, but I'm talking more about the chin area, the pre-gel that you mentioned. So if I had to pick one where there's really, to me, no other good option, that's the one. And I see the most difference. But of course, my favorite is temples, high cheek, preauricular, jawline, and the lower jaw. Pretty much most of my patients were doing full faces all day because it's what I enjoy. Mm-hmm. And then I add fillers to contour. So if someone comes back after that and they want a high, sharp, defined cheek or a nice jawline, I'll add a bit of radius in there or high G prime filler. But Sculptra, I like to be my base.
Interesting, because I sometimes have the opposite approach. So I will place bolsters of support with cheek contour, pulling the cheekbone up back and lateral and adding a sharp chiseled jawline, and that, you know, pulls the jowl backwards. So adding these kind of buttresses of support first to pexy the sagging, and then later filling the remaining foundation with Sculptra. So I've kind of been doing the opposite.
It's good. And that's, I think it's perfect because there's so many ways to do it. And Sculptra marries well with other products. I mean, and the one benefit of the way you're talking about is they are going to get that instant, so they're going to see it. And populations are different. You know, if you're in California, Southern California, you might want to give that instant first. Where I'm at, still a lot of people are happier having a very slow, gradual result. So I'm not pushed to give them the instant first. But I think either way you do it, it's discussing with the patient. Because if my patient's coming here to Vegas for the weekend and want something quicker, I would do that too first and then go to the Sculptra. But I guess I just like Sculptra so much, I want to start with it and then add on to it. But the beauty is, and that highlights the point that we're talking about, people who train for a long period of time and they use it a lot, they can make those adjustments and they feel comfortable combining. But you can't just, as you know, haphazardly combine. You want to strategically combine, keep it clean, meaning the skin and the entry points, and combine it in a safe manner so you don't get problems, nodules, or infection.
That's so true. I think people want some instant gratification, so that's a challenge. And you have to do some educating, teaching people about Sculptra. You definitely have to photograph because they certainly will forget the face they started with. And they start to see, like, no change, no improvement in it. And then, I mean, how do you advise people, like, sit back and wait, give it 4 months, give it 6 months to really blossom?
You know, I been doing this a long time like you, so my practice has become that. So the people that come in are often referred by existing patients, and they know. And I just tell them, if you want to get the natural result, then this is the program. So I'm kind of directive, but I think also And in your case, where you've been doing it a long time, they're going to listen to you. And I think if you said, or I said to someone, this is not the right treatment for you, they're going to listen to us because we have their best interest in mind. And that level of trust that we both, you and I, hope permeates the industry continuing to go forward. And I don't think that there is a lot of trust in general of the public. I'm just going to use the word injectors as a whole. I think they're very suspicious and they believe we're in it for the money and it's all about the money. But to be frank, and I'd like to hear your comments on this too, but I like happiness around me. I like happy, successful patients that look great. Whether it takes me 1 month to get there or six, I personally don't care. And I tell them that. But it's more their lifetime. I'm invested in how are you going to look 5 years from now, 10 years from now. But those are the people I want to surround myself with, not the instant. If I don't have a solution, then I tell them I don't, and maybe there's a better practice for you. But I think that comes with age and time, you know, turning people away if they're not correct for your mindset.
Mm-hmm. That takes a lot of maturity. It's self-work. Yep. Because in the beginning, you want to be a busy injector. You want to say yes to everybody. You want to please everybody. And you have to learn to not want to please everybody. You have to learn to tell them the things they don't want to hear and the painful things and the harsh realities of, like, you need surgery. There's no amount of filler that's going to fix this. You need facelift. It's hard to talk to people so frankly, but they respect you when you do. And I agree with you. I think that the med spa mentality and the price gouging, the Groupon, the cutting, you know, the people that go to those places, they're not valuing our opinions, and those are maybe not the clients that we need anyhow, but they're going to have these ugly results that makes the rest of the world think that injectables are an ugly, you know, gory looking Hollywood thing.
Yeah, and I think it's important for people to keep in mind the ones that they see and they associate with getting something done, of course, they're seeing something they don't like. But the majority of people should come out of a practice. After a couple of weeks, they should look natural and look good. Most people wouldn't pick them out for getting injectables. Like, oh, you look good. You look refreshed. What do you do? But I think you're absolutely right. So we all have to take responsibility in terms of the instant. And there is the mentation people want. They're driven to get something done. I think that's why everyone wants to get lips and cheeks. And, yeah. And different parts of the country are different. You know, I think you and I are in very somewhat different territories, but then you go to the Midwest and it's way different from Canada, way different up there. You know, they would want much more subtle.
I think women today have so much pressure to look good. I feel bad for my patients sometimes because there are these lovely ladies sitting in my chair and they've really critiqued the hell out of their faces to the point that they feel like they're not pretty and they have no self-confidence. And, you know, if you ever heard their direct messages, they DM about, like, I'm so ugly, I can't even look at my face. You open the message and there's this very attractive, cute little person there. And you just wonder, like, what internal voice are you talking to yourself with and what has possessed you?
I put it personally a lot on social media for all the algorithms pick the most perfect. If you're talking women here, you say with larger eyes, high cheekbone, larger lips, perfect chin to nose ratio. And I think that creates pressure. But I'd be interested to know what you think. Where is that pressure coming from today that's different from 10 years ago? If I was giving one answer, I would put it back on social media. But I know social media can do good and there are bad things it can do, but I also look at the kids of our patients, especially the females, but also the males now. And at age 9, I don't, you guys know better than I, but 9, 10, 11, 12, I see them taking selfies on the beach with their mom in bikinis, taking selfies. So they're growing up with that. Mm-hmm. So we have to look and see where that comes from.
Well, I mean, I grew up with 17 magazine and Vogue. Like, we had paper magazines. And I remember wanting to be every model, you know, wanting to be the Paulina Porizkova or Cindy Crawford and like these perfect faces who, those supermodels didn't have any work done. Those were the days before Botox and fillers and they just had those ideal aesthetic proportions. But still, you craved that and wanted to be that even pre-social media. Being in high school, those were things that you wanted. And even in Madeline, you know, Marilyn Monroe days, like in the 1950s, everyone knows what beauty is. Your psyche knows, your brain knows, your evolutionary, you know, human brain knows beauty when it sees it. So it's not wrong to crave that. But I think you're right that the selfies have really made this such a prevalent thing. Like, never in the history of humankind have humans taken so many photos of themselves.
You can do something about it. If you take the photo and you want an Angelina Jolie lip, you want a Kylie Jenner lip, I mean, 16 and over is what I see a lot of times in California. You can pop into your clinic right after high school, get lip filler done.
Moms are bringing their daughters in right now. Yep. And I don't really have a problem with it. As long as it's a good family decision, it's cool.
So but back then, I mean, you didn't have that option, though. You know,
no, you had girls getting their noses done for their bat mitzvah, turning 13. This has always been a thing. But taking photos, like we only used to have a yearbook photo once a year and a family Christmas card. Two photos a year where you were required to scrutinize your own face and judge yourself, right? And now it's how many photos a day? There's not a day without 20.
We're blaming this on Steve Jobs, poor guy. I think that's what we're saying right now. It's the iPhone.
It is. Did you see that social network thing on Netflix?
I did see it. I think it's fascinating. I think everyone should watch it. And I think there's a lot of truth to that. So, yeah, I did watch it.
Yeah, I think that is part of it, is scrutinizing yourself. And, like, your brain knows how you line up according to the attractiveness scale. And we don't lie to ourselves. But it's such a superficial... It's such a bad thing. We need to teach our patients to not value external beauty so much, because you're headed for disappointment, girl. Like, don't you know that you are going to age? And I can't stop that process for you.
What would you say to the 23-year-old, 22-year-old, 25-year-old wants to be an influencer, used to be a model, but right now we'll go with 2021, we'll say wants to be an influencer, make a career out of talking maybe about skincare, affiliate marketing. You know, these people are making a career, meaning $5,000 to $25,000 a month is not out of the question, not out of the reach. It's like going to college and getting a degree. They come in, when they sit in the chair, they realize that they need a little popped up lip. They need a bit of a cheek. They need to have a jawline. And when they do, they're more successful. And to your point about the pictures, it's a career move to get these procedures in many cases. So how many Hollywood stars do we know would not be there, particularly I'm thinking under 35, if they didn't have breast implants, their nose done, maybe a bleph, and something along the jawline, they wouldn't be found.
Yeah, it's very true. I mean, the aesthetic of beauty, it is what it is. It's universal. And that one in a million person is born with it, and the rest of us strive for it. But once you achieve it, yes, you're going to get a better spouse. You're going to get a better job. You're going to have more income come your way. It all comes down to beauty, and that's human evolution, I guess.
Has it ever been as dramatic as now, though, in terms of, you said something important that a lot of people would... they would say you're correct in the end, but they would not be happy that you said that. Now, I'm talking different parts of the country are different, but you take someone in certain parts of the country, say they're going to get a better spouse, they're going to get a better job, they're going to get more money. That has to sink in, and people have to absorb that. Not everyone has come to terms that that is the reality. A lot of people... take offense to that. I know from
it's all about personality, and I hope that we all look for a spouse that has intelligence and love and kindness and humor and all the great things. But if that initial attraction's not there, that you may never discover that. Mm-hmm. And that's the way it is. But I mean, I want to encourage my patients in the chair, and I say women because it's 90% women, but even the men, to like build their brain power and give themselves other skill sets. So it's not all about external judgment. Like, you're not a bad person if you're not perfect on the exterior. You need to have, one of the reasons I've survived and had four kids and I'm not worried about like a wrinkle or a stretch marks, because I know I'm smart. I work damn hard. I put myself through med school. I have the skill set that's not leaving even when my beauty deteriorates. And not enough kids today care or do that or invest in themselves.
Yeah, those are a lot of those are temporary jobs, temporary positions, and they will at some point need to find something else. So, yeah, I mean, in this industry, the one nice thing is obviously I work with mainly women, and they are what you're talking about, educated, empowered, smart. So this industry, I think, has helped. We're talking about some of the negative things within the industry, but it has helped women come to the forefront because there's a lot of power. And I like your number, 10% men. Maybe I have 15% max men. So I'm seeing, you know, 85% women. And as a woman in the industry, you have that ability to take that to the next level. So, yeah, I think there's a lot of empowerment that's happened too.
That's true. This is a women-dominated industry, but...
I'm a minority here.
Well, unfortunately, the corporate boards are all still male-dominated, and the research is male-dominated.
Get rid of them, little by little.
I mean, even so, things like the syringes are designed for the size of the man hand, even though it's 90% women injectors out there. Like, little things still have to change.
Yeah, no question. But I think companies are more cognizant of this. Everything takes time, and I was looking.
They're cognizant, but they're giving us bullshit campaigns like Juvedermit and like these silly-looking boss girls walking around looking trampy, and like
exactly
that does not appeal to me. That commercial fully failed. Sorry, Juvederm, but I gotta say what I gotta say, and those things don't ring true. So some of the advertising and marketing that companies are directing to our clients out there does not ring true.
But I do look and I go, well, from 10 years ago, 20 years ago to now, is there progress? And I think definitely. And on the boards, progress, yes, a lot of women. So it's hard to look at it over a five-year time frame. But I think in the long term, we've seen more women on the corporate boards, more women taking positions. And now you have to mobilize them, because when they enter a man's world, it's easy not to advocate as much for women. So women need to advocate for women too. But I think there's a lot of changes that I've seen that I'm hopeful. And you're creating people like you creating awareness of it. Like if you take social media, we talked about some of the negatives, but you have the power now comes through social media, and you've developed that. So you'll take that message and you'll create it, and for your staff and the people around you. So I'm hopeful, and I see those changes. So it's great.
Men are not immune from all the social pressure either. I mean, male movie stars, like, okay, I think good examples of who I reportedly think might have sculpture in their face, Brad Pitt. Seems like he's done some sculpture, some nice. And that's, speaking of, like, one of the great results of sculpture, like, look, youthful, still looks rugged, still has some lines, but overall, the maintenance and the glow.
Yeah, and I think...
Matthew McConaughey, I suspect... Yeah.
And I think with them, what you see sometimes is where you get pictures or you see frames of them where you think, oh, they didn't have anything done. You can see them frowning. You can see crow's feet. They may not top up their Botox-type treatments every 3 months. And that gives them that ruggedness. And they can so understand just doing aesthetics, you can change your look. But I agree with you, their foundation is based on some treatments. But so when people look and say, oh, they haven't done anything, look around their eyes, look at their frown, that's maintenance every 3 to 6 months that maybe they don't keep up on. But watch them in given points in time, they look refreshed. They look so.
Yes, pre-red carpet, they get their glow.
Yeah.
And then for the movie, they can have emotion and ruggedness. Yeah. And I'm a big believer of letting my Botox wear off.
Yeah.
I don't want facial muscle atrophy. I don't want bone density changes in my skin and face.
You can see my frown right now, you
Same.
Know. Yeah. So, and I look at it before coming to this show. Oh, should I do my Botox type treatment up there and brow? No, I want it to fully come back. And then, but I, sometimes for a male patient, I don't stress over that. I could, you know, it doesn't bother me. And that's what I think we see with the stars. I think we have the liberty of letting it go a little more than the female that, to your point, feels a little more pressured. I think the male doesn't have that level of pressure
The double standard.
Yeah. So that's how I feel about it. But
men look good when they get rugged. Women look a little weathered, not so much. When we get rugged, it's not as good, but societally. but I think, like, the natural things that you are doing in your practice and this evolution of going from just treating a spot area of the face to just a lip or just a nasolabial fold to now, as we have become more mature injectors, it's a full face analysis, a full face treatment, and multi-level depth treatments from the skin to the dermis to the muscle layer to everything is looked at.
Yes, exactly. And I think that will help give natural results. And I think the other thing is, though, it's not a $500 treatment. Most people have to understand a facial treatment is upwards of $2,000. So it's valuing it financially, too. People think that it's going, they go in that get that quick fix. A lot of times that's what looks unnatural. So, and that takes a lot to educate on, but I agree.
Yeah. And I want to convince women to also to get away from doing like that one procedure that brings a little fast joy, like the lip filler. You get that feeling of sexy, glamour, the impulse buy. Yes. Like I would much rather you put that money into your facial foundation. And if I had the choice, I'd take it right out of your lips and put it into cheekbones, you know, someplace in the midface.
Absolutely. Yeah. And brings up a good point, too, because there are, it is about collecting money for a lot of practices. Look, at the end of the day, what do we do today? So giving that quick fix. And I think if you stay with one practice and you allow your provider to be honest, but there is a lot of pressure to do those quick fixes.
We'll talk a little bit about PRF and PRM and PRP.
Yeah, a PRP, you know, you, for people who don't know, you do a simple blood draw, like many women are used to getting during their yearly visits, and you get the blood, you spin it down, and when you heal a wound, the platelets aggregate, and around the platelets are growth factors, and those growth factors can heal many things, because think about it, you can take a cut, it heals itself, and you have nice, beautiful skin a month later. So we're taking that machinery of the body, and we're using it to rejuvenate the skin around the eye to help brow hair. I even use it in the lip to give color. It gives a little subtle volume. We use it in chins. So there's many ways to use it, but it's evolving, and it's all natural. It is not the quick fix of a filler. You know, and that's why I'm used to having that conversation. But, you know, to be frank, it's well accepted by my patients because they know my mindset coming in. And that's how social media helps, too. A lot of people want quick fixes. They go, I probably won't go see Rajani. He might say no. So that becomes the nature of your practice. But I love it. It's all natural. Doesn't mean you can't do fillers and Sculptor, too, but it allows you to minimize them.
Now, there have been a couple case reports of PRP causing vascular occlusions, maybe because the fibrin particles of it. Does that make you scared?
You know, when you dig into those cases and the ones that I'm thinking of, there was about 4 to 6 cases. And there was a paper recently, if that's the one you're referring to, and 2 of those cases were mixing it with fat. They were also injecting in the glabella in the nose. And another one of those cases actually was filler mixed with PRF or PRP, but if you dissect those cases out, that's what became of that. I'm always nervous, and I use a cannula only for platelet-rich fiber, no matter where I put it, except for hair growth. So I think it is something we have to be cognizant about. I would also say, outside of those cases, there's no cases that I'm aware of blindness. And the clot itself, the body gets rid of clots. So could you get a full necrosis? It's possible, but you treat as safely as you can. There have been no cases that, because I follow the PRF very close in North America or in the United States, that I'm aware of it. And there you could, theoretically, you have TPA, clot busters that we use for heart attacks, platelet aggregations in those vessels, and heparin that you could reverse it with. Mm-hmm. So there is an out, but I'm always nervous, yes. But the data doesn't show that I should be.
And in the scalp, you're using a needle?
Yes. And I think that represents, I'm nervous about that, of course. Again, there's no real cases. But, of course, the veins and the arteries communicate there. I'm cognizant of it. I also, a lot of times, will add A-cell for hair, cellular matrix. So, but I do think that poses a bit of a risk, albeit low. What are risks? Well, 1 in 10,000, 1 in 100,000. People take more risk driving to my practice in many cases than they do of that occurring. People accept car crashes more easily than they do filler catastrophes. So it's societal, and aesthetics is optional. But I think you be as safe as you can be.
So A-cell, you're using an acellular fibrin matrix. So it just allows that platelet-derived growth factor to sit in a cushiony environment and stay there.
Yeah, and it's pig bladder stem cells. So it's used for wound healing, but it's been found to work great for hair. I find if you don't use it and you have to do 4 treatments, 5 treatments a year, people get tired of that and they can't come back, at least my patients. So by adding that, I get 1 to 2 and single treatment.
One treatment? Oh my goodness, I'm going to need to do that one.
I started doing it for men and my buddies, and I would do it. And then some wives came in, and now I would say 80% of the people I treat are women. And I had
maybe
no
we
idea.
Should just be doing this like on a maintenance basis, like start at age 30, 35, once a year, just get your hair booster.
I've had 20 some year olds being brought in by their parents for hair loss. They get the blood work up and everything, and it's worked great. It's very predictable, but of course these are complex things. I wouldn't say it's worked for everyone. In my practice, it has, but I don't think that's should be expected, but it's just worked out. Also, I choose my patients carefully, but women who are seeing receding hair, and it's more common than I knew of. I mean, I'm still, I had no idea women would be coming in honestly for this, thought men would. So I'm learning about what women want, but I tell you, they love it. They
you
love
guys
it.
Don't know the amount of hair extensions that hides the real problems.
I never did, honestly. Yeah. I did not. I just like,
my hairstylist patients tell me, they're like, did you know like 95% of women on the red carpet for the Oscars, they all have hair extensions. None of that is their hair.
Well, now you're telling me something I never needed to even know. You know, that was the secret, not anymore.
Not to reveal, but all women have that. And especially as we get into your 40s, you get like testosterone-related androgenic alopecia. It's a whole thing. Yeah. It's a whole thing. Well, so A-cell, so then mixing that with some PRP and injecting that.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's many, and these are all amazing treatments that are up and coming and that are, you'll see more and more of as time goes on. So there's more solutions.
Are you going to mix A-cell with Sculptra ever? You're a mixer. You like to mix.
Yeah, but that worries me a little bit. I always look, I go, well, why would I need to? I'm getting such great results and I use Sculptra and PRF. I'm not competent of doing that in the face, to be honest. I have no data. As out there as people think, I'm quite calculated, and it's a face, you know, and I have zero data to go on for that, whereas the other things I do, I have information to make me feel comfortable. Mm-hmm. I know there's people that do that, but not for me. I'll let someone else go down that road, figure it out, and then teach me.
Sculptra for the butt. Any thoughts?
Love it. Of course. I love it. I mean, it's great for people that don't have fat, that have the money to do it, because I tend to use a lot of it in the cases I do. We use 10 or 20 vials plus, and a hip dip, yeah, you can get 3 vials a side or so, but a lot of people, the expectation now is a larger buttock. And so, but people who do it actually, again, very high satisfaction. People like it. But if it's their last $5,000 ever, I don't recommend it. They have to have the money to be able to do it.
And do the right number of treatments. I've found 20 to 30 vials is ideal, depending on what you're starting with. But yeah, it's really effective. It does take time, but it really truly blossoms at 4 to 6 months. Like right when you think you're done, you're not really done growing.
And it lasts. And what people more so come back is not to complain about it, but a year, 2, 3, 4, 5 later, they'll come back and say, hey, can I have a little top up? Can I have a little more? Yeah. So you know you're doing a good treatment and service to the patient when they like it and they realize they need a bit of a top up at times.
It's been hard to get consistency and follow up because everyone has a different budget with Sculptra. So, you know, how do you determine? But we did do a study with 60 patients that kind of showed the optimal number was at least 20 vials or more and usually 2 to 3 sessions. So you definitely have to have the budget, the time, the patience, everything. But it's such a good treatment. When it works, it works. Are you trying Quo for cellulite? And how do you think that should be done in conjunction with Sculptra or separate?
I'm not a huge fan. I it's been a while now, but I wasn't impressed personally with the data. I wasn't impressed with it.
I've been shocked at how good it's working in terms of... It's so easy. You just, you know, the shot technique is quite simple, but with one session, like more than 80% improvement of dimples. Like, I was shocked, frankly.
I'll try it now.
You should, because I was not a believer, but I was just skeptical based on the advertising. Like, okay, sure, I'll try it. But my very first patient, beautiful results. 70 to 80% improvement, about 15 to 20 dimples. And then her second treatment after that, like, she's left with like 10% of the, like, really excellent results, 90% improvement.
Well, I'll go home and try, and I'll report back to you now.
Yes, but I was just thinking, like, okay, it's a collagenase. I want to grow collagen. I don't think they should be mixed with Sculptra. I should probably do those about 6 weeks apart at least.
Yeah, and collagenase I used years ago in mesotherapy cocktails, like 20 years ago. So, but, you know, it was variable, the product that we got. We were very cautious because you didn't want to do harm. And there was some stigma around doing it became known as people were doing lipodissolve, which is different, mm-hmm. but collagenase was part of that cocktail, not used as the same. So, you know, it's,
but I think that's a totally different product used for, you know, penile contractures now. And branched off from that into cellulite. So maybe over time.
No, I agree. I agree. And we didn't use it the same way in the same doses, concentrations. But yeah, no, I don't have much experience with it.
Well, it's always so nice to learn from you. And my biggest learning tip from you is always about how I need to take more time to enjoy life and see less patients and more in depth. What other tips do you have about life and surviving as an injector?
Yeah, I mean, I think most importantly is do the things that you enjoy to the tune of about 85-90%, and the things you don't, that you have to try and get that to 10%. There's always going to be things that aren't the most favorite part of your day, but we have to. You don't have a choice. And then just surrounding yourself with great people and get rid of the people that aren't great. Life is short, and there's people around, people listening right now that they're not enjoying. It's not working out, and you have to find out who they are, have that frank conversation, and you can't, because all the serotonin, the endorphins, all the things that we sit here percolating through our bodies depend on your mood and your head, mm-hmm. you know, and we're, as much as people don't think, I mean, people who see aesthetic injectors, people in the aesthetic world, plastic surgeons, they think it's glorified, you have this easy day, you're making people beautiful, but it's actually one of the most difficult, complex jobs there is, and psychology plays a huge role. And I think there's a lot of pressure and stress with it, so you have to be, you have to understand that.
Yeah, the life of like addressing being an injector, being a surgeon, you know, that it's so hard to please people, and you want to do your best, and you're all the time thinking of their anatomy, their psyche, their budget. It's a lot of things you're balancing, and their desire for perfection.
And no one's going to put that on social media. No one's going to sit here and go, oh, I had four problem patients for one reason or another. Not that anything was done wrong, but the patient looks 90% better, but they didn't get the last 10%, and they're upset, and they're going to go write a review and tell all the people on their boat tonight. Yeah. You know, and so I think it's glorified, which I get it, but so we have to be much more conscious and take care of ourselves than maybe other professions where it's all out there and people know everything.
You have to take care of your happiness. My nurse Carmen told me, like, she was like, show me the five people you hang out with and I'll show you who you are.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my God, that hits home, because I want to hang out with happy people at work where it's a fun team, and I want to have happy patients. Like, you sometimes get that person in your chair who's just, they're not a happy person, and you can't fix that for everybody.
No, absolutely not.
Yeah. So, short life lesson. You're the sum total of the five people you hang out with most.
I'm going to go home and pare that down right now.
I'm going to go figure out who that is and make sure it's a good five. I'm going to teach that to my kids. But you're incredible. Your YouTube channel is an inspiration. I don't know how you do it. It's like a worldwide campaign of teaching. So I just want to thank you for your mission and your passion and doing it and your openness. You're just so generous and giving with your knowledge. It's just to be commended.
You're very, very kind. And I'm hoping I'm one of the five people you keep in your circle for positivity.
You're in my inner circle.
Because you represent the same. So it's good to keep the mission going, and I really appreciate you having me here.
Oh my gosh, such a pleasure. You guys need to go check out Dr. Anil Rajani. Tell us where people can find you.
Well, you can go onto YouTube and you can look up Rajani MD, Rajani skincare, and just search anything, Rajani Botox, Rajani, whatever you want to see, and probably I'll pop up. And then on Instagram at Rajani MD skincare.
Constantly helping evolve the face of this industry and injectors everywhere. And I'm just really glad to be on this journey with great leaders like you. It really matters. So I think all of you out there should find a mentor, whether it's a real mentor or a virtual mentor. I'm happy to be your mentor. I know Dr. Rajani will be your mentor, but you need to find someone to give you light, hope, and guidance when your day is hard and you don't know what to do. It's important to have that network around you.
Absolutely. I parrot you exactly what you're saying, and thank you very much for having me.
That's That's it for now, guys. Don't forget to find me on my Instagram. It's Beauty by Dr. K, D-R-K-A-Y. And that's where you'll find me doing amazing things with people's faces. And our website is the same, beautybydrk.com, for all of our skincare. Leave us a great review. And don't forget to follow Dr. Rajani. Learn with me at modernaesthetictheory.com. And that's it for now. Stay beautiful.